It's over. It's all over. The drought. The dam wall is busted. It's 62 long years.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
This is the Sports Desk Podcast right here on SEN.
Here it is!
Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk Podcast here on SEN. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and alongside me, as always, is Lucy Walken. Lucy, how are we?
I'm good, thank you Ben. Good to be back.
It is good to be back.
The Sports Desk Podcast. We've had a bit of a break, but back better than ever.
Let's hope so. We're a bit more consistent, but
yeah,
we've had a little bit of stuff going on. So we're back anyway for this week, and it's been a huge month in sport that we missed out on. I mean, the AFL, we're in the mid-season, so we'll be having a couple of predictions there. In the tennis, there's the Roland Garros that's been going on. Cricket, there was the ICC Champions Trophy. Australia controversially knocked out after only playing one full game. Even that was rain affected.
Love the English summer. Love it.
Summer.
Yeah, exactly.
In quotation marks. The NBA, the finals are happening right now and it is exciting as ever. And soccer's been happening with just a casual 96,000 rocking up to the MCG on Friday night.
Huge crowd.
Absolutely massive.
Yeah.
So we'll start off with AFL and we'll just get our mid-season predictions. So at the moment, halfway through the season, Adelaide sit on top of the table, overtaking GWS, who unfortunately lost today to Carlton.
And huge scalp for Carlton.
Massive, because Carlton now lift themselves from 17th to 16th. Now, in the scheme of things, it's not that great of a deal, but from 5th, which is Port Adelaide, they sit on 24 points, to Hawthorn, who sit in 17th on 16 points, there's just two games separating 5th from 17th.
That's just ridiculous. Like, it's actually ridiculous. I don't think we've had a season like that, well, like this, in so long. Like, I can't even remember a season where we've had this.
Like, GWS going to this game, they were first. Carlton's 17th.
Yeah.
And they dropped the game to 17th.
Same. Like,
and GWS to me, I didn't even think going to this match, I'm like, okay, Carlton have no chance. I didn't really think that.
Yeah.
You always thought Carlton had a chance, so this has just been an incredible season. I think this is like the AFL's dream in terms of equality across the league.
Yeah.
It's just been so equal and it's just that any team on any day could win.
Yeah.
So like my boys on Saturday night beat Fremantle. I didn't think that would have happened.
That was a good game too. Yeah.
Like, yeah, surprisingly. Yeah. So this is ridiculous. I mean, Hawthorn are 17th. Who would have thought we'd be saying that? So
yeah.
Two games separating 5th from 17th. If it comes down to the closing rounds of the season and it's the same case, I mean, the final series, you could say that 8th could win it rather than 7th last year from the Doggies.
Mm. Well, oh, I know. Thinking of finals, I'm just like, oh, I don't even know because, yeah, if between 8th and even 3rd, 8th and 3rd, it's anyone's game. It's the Western Bulldogs story last year was like a bit magic fairy tale. They did very well to overcome from 7th to the grand final win. But I think this year you could back anyone from any stage from 3rd till 8th and be like they could be in the grand final by the end of this final series. It's ridiculous.
And by going with this ladder, you could even say that maybe even in the final rounds of the season, 12th, say St Kilda or even Gold Coast where they're sitting in 13th where they're only one game outside the 8th, they could finish in the top 8. Should results go their way.
You would never ever say, I don't think, that a team that is like 13th, 12th or 13th, that they could make the 8. Like, I think it's been said before, like, oh, they could make the 8, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like the media trying to keep it like a little bit interesting, you know, because usually that 8 is set in stone. But no, if the teams who are in 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th play good football from here on in, they could easily end up being 6th by the end of the season.
Exactly.
It's weird as.
That's how close it has been this season. It's incredible. So, speaking of top 8, Lucy, I'm going to pose a tough question to you. What is your top 8 come the end of the season?
Come the end of the season, I think the top 4 that we have now, I think that'll stay the same. So, first Adelaide, second GWS, third Geelong, fourth Richmond. Richmond fourth.
Yeah. That's I think come the when it was the quarterly predictions, I didn't think Richmond were the real deal, but they've just proved everyone wrong, haven't they?
Oh,
they've been incredible, and their style of football is very exciting to watch. And yeah, so I definitely see them in my top eight. Keep going, keep going.
And then I think Port will finish fifth. I do, despite their pretty astonishingly bad performance last night against Essendon.
They're the only side in the top eight that remains in the top eight to have beaten, to have not beaten a top eight side this season. Port Adelaide, that is.
Well, maybe I'm wrong there. But I think 6, 7, 8, I think West Coast will finish sixth. And I think we'll see Essendon finish seventh. And
Essendon in the finals.
Essendon in the finals. And Western Bulldogs finish eighth. I don't see Western Bulldogs finishing any higher than seventh, to be honest. They haven't inspired me this season, which I think was the same as last season.
They played like this last season, yeah, you're right. They didn't really look likely. For me, top four, I'm not too sure any other side can break into that top four. For me, if the Bulldogs get onto a run, they can. And potentially West Coast, even as controversial as that is, if they string a couple of home games together, home wins, and use that momentum, they could potentially finish in the top four. So that's my six. So West Coast and the Bulldogs along with the top four. For seventh and eighth, so I don't think Essendon make finals. I don't. Freo in ninth, they won't make finals. I've got Sydney coming into my top eight. I reckon they're going to have a very good, strong
finish.
This is
what I like
finish.
To hear, Ben. This is what I like to hear.
Strong finish to the season. And for the final position in my top eight at this stage, I don't know about Port Adelaide, but I've kind of liked Melbourne all season, and I think they may, if they string a couple of consistent performances together, I think they can sneak into the eight because their football. They beat Adelaide Adelaide Oval, but the following week, who they lost to? They lost to Fremantle either the week before or the week after at the MCG. So they play in patches. I just think their best football deserves to see them in the eight. So I'm going to go with the smoke. I'm going to go with Melbourne. So top eight again was Melbourne, Sydney, West Coast and the Western Bulldogs, and the current top four of Adelaide, GWS, Geelong and Richmond. So it's going to be... You can't
big
really
changes.
Predict it.
You put big changes in there. I like it.
Yeah, but... Come the three quarterly time of the season, our predictions could be completely different again.
Again, I know. That's
because I put my hand up. I didn't think Richmond were the real deal.
Yeah.
I put my hand up.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people did about the quarter season. They're like, they've had, like, the run they've had, you know, it's all right. But.
They didn't really beat anyone.
But they didn't really beat anyone. But now they've gotten.
They've proven it.
They've proven it. They've come. The only thing that did them a disservice was coming close. They lost three games. And the margins all added up to under 10 points for those three games, which was disappointing for them. But I think that just shows that they're competitive.
Exactly.
And they're real competitors. So I reckon they will stay there.
That's the thing. That's going to be the whole season. Just a couple of those games will define your season, where you end up. So that's what we love. That's what we love about this season so far. It's just incredible how tight it is. So we'll move on from that. We'll... get into our thoughts on the new rule changes this year with the third man up rule and the stricter interpretation on deliberate out of bounds and deliberate rush behinds, Lucy.
Yeah, well, deliberate was a rule at the start of the season where I didn't quite get it, where all of a sudden I kind of thought that it was like all of a sudden they were just being so strict and it sort of came out of nowhere. But as the season's gone on, I've actually really sort of come around to it in that, you know, as a junior, and I think still probably in the AFL level, you get told, if in doubt, go towards the boundary line.
Yeah.
And so it has created that more like flowing play. It's kept the ball in play. It's arguably made the players work harder and be smarter. So I think that has been a good rule change. Third man up rule, I don't know, like playing football and that rule being in our league as well, I think that makes sense because I think 9 times out of 10, it's not having that big of an impact on a game.
Mm-hmm.
But when it does, it's disastrous.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit on the fence about it. Like, because as I said, I feel like it doesn't make that much of a difference, but when it does, it's very noticeable. What do you think?
Well, deliberate rule, I like it. I just think the deliberate rush behind needs to be the same as deliberate out of bounds because Jaden Short, I think it was against when we were playing for Richmond, when Josh Green was hot on his tail, the deliberate rush behind interpretation is that it's the exact same as the rush behind, except there's a little bit of leniency in terms of if they are under immediate pressure.
Yeah.
And if you look at the tape, Josh Green was only 5 metres off Short's backside.
Mm.
So, and Short, he made absolutely no attempt to keep it in, which I agree, but you can make the argument that there was immediate pressure. So I think, I agreed with the decision. I thought it should have been paid deliberate rush behind. You know the decision I'm talking about. But they should make it the exact same as the rush, as the out of bounds. So I like the rule because it forces players to keep it in. But some umpiring decisions have just been incredibly inconsistent this season. And that's to be expected.
That's the thing that kills it.
That's to be expected, though, because this season, it's the first time it's been brought in. So it's going to take them a while to get used to it, but I think it's just going to be that. So if there's been no attempt whatsoever to keep the ball in, so like for example, those kick-ins from, say, like 50 metres out or whatever, that they dribble out. So like I think there was a – I can't remember who it was. It might have been North a couple of weeks ago or whatever. Some bloke tried to keep it in. It was a banana kick, and they've pinned it deliberate.
I didn't get that one either, where it's like you just bomb it.
Yeah,
you're just bombing it to get it. Because
they're already under pressure as well, and they're just trying to keep it in. Like those ones, there needs to be definitely a little bit of a look into that. But yeah, overall, I'm pretty satisfied with the rule change. I like it.
Yeah.
With the fair man up rule, that's probably been the most scrutinised decision or rule change that there's been. It's good in theory, but I think the players just aren't that used to it yet because the games that I umpire in the Northern Footy League, so like 19s and reserves, we tell the players at the start of the match, all right, if you go in the ruck, nominate, put your hand up.
Mm.
So they'll do that before each contest so we know who the ruckmen are. And basically the players, as soon as they see one of their teammates go up, they know straight away, oh, crap, we've stuffed this one up. So I think the AFL players just got to get used to it a bit because the Bontempelli case, when he played North Melbourne, was it North or whoever it was, that was a pretty big one because that cost them a goal. So there just needs to be a little bit of, the umpires just really need to get it into the players' heads. You need to nominate, put your hand up, make it really noticeable to the umpire who it is because it's hard for them to know.
I think it would be hard for an umpire as well, and you would probably like know this and that.
Yeah.
When you're playing and you know, you probably know who the ruckmen are after the first few stoppages, that if you have all of a sudden a random player nominate, you'd kind of be like, oh, but where's the guy that's been doing it? And
exactly.
So you'd be a bit confused. So yeah, making it, being the player that's nominating it and making it more obvious if you're not that usual player, that's where it's been a bit disastrous.
So I always take my time whenever I do a ball up. I'd be like, all right, put your hand up if you're in the ruck, who's in the ruck contest. And there's been several occasions where I'll take just an extra 5 seconds because I look at the regular ruckman and he's not putting his hand up, but some other bloke is. And he's like, yeah, I am. So I'm like, all right.
Okay.
So he's in the ruck.
Yeah.
So that's what it needs to be, just a bit more obvious from the players and a bit more getting used to the rule, I think.
I think so too.
And just our last point in AFL, this could be a segment that we may do each podcast. We'll just see how we go. But this is going to be a question posed to Lucy and I. If we were the commissioner for a day, what would we change or implement into the league right now?
Right now, I think they need to make an absolute stance on jumper punches.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can have the stance and whatever, but whether or not they have made that stance too late in a season, I think that's another thing. So I think having a stance is fine and being like, we're going to crack down on this, but it's too hard when there's an match review panel that hasn't aligned with the stance.
Yeah.
So I think if I was the AFL commissioner, I would make this stance and I would say, we're against it and we're going to do everything we can to stamp it out of our game. But until we can align this with the match review panel so it makes a lot more sense, then that's when you will see real changes to the game.
Yeah, because their callings on that have been so inconsistent. Who was the Sydney player that did it?
Zach Jones.
Zach Jones, that's right. He did it and he didn't get suspended.
And then
that was a punch.
And it was a full punch. And then
Hawkins.
Tom Hawkins got a week. So
yeah, you can't have that. It's just, that's not on. And if they're going to make a stance or something, they're going to bring in a new rule change in the middle of the season. They need to be stamping on it immediately and being consistent as they can with it. That call on Zach Jones was just ridiculous, not suspending him if you're going to suspend Tom Hawkins.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't really do that. For me, what I would do if I was a commissioner for a day, I'd do something a little bit controversial, and because there's been all this talk about having a 17/5 round selection, so there'll be a split, 17 rounds, and then you split the top three, split the league into three parts, so three teams of six, and for the remaining five rounds. I reckon just get rid of the five rounds and just have 17 rounds of the season, so that way each team plays each other once.
Interesting.
And then you'd say the next year, say Brisbane played Hawthorn at the MCG, they'd change and Brisbane have the home game. Promoting equality and fairness in the league.
So, like, it changes every year.
So that way,
I don't know if I like that.
That way no clubs can complain about, oh, okay, we played such and such five top eight sides twice this season. Because there's always this debate about that. You just play each other once. You change the home games each every season. So that way it's just all fair for the league. Players don't really have to complain and getting tired. They can still have a bye if they wish. And in this bye round, we can talk about this another week. You could have State of Origin, for example, or a promotion of footy type of weekend. So I just like that 17-round season. It's just short, simple, and it's fair. That's my view on it. What do you reckon about that, Lucy?
Yeah, when you mentioned the top eight thing, like, that does make sense. But then I'm just like, there's such a gap. Like, if it was 17 weeks, then do you still have your grand final in the last week of September?
So there's so much.
I'm so big on tradition. Like, I was one of those people that was, like, sad when they said they weren't going to do the draw thing anymore.
Yeah, true. Well, you can make the AFLW season longer. Start the AFL season later. Yeah.
Now you're talking, Ben.
There's so much you could do about it. Because the NFL, they have a 16-round season, is it? Something like that? It's short, very short. So they could implement the same thing easily for footy for 17 rounds. And I think
it'll work.
The only thing stopping is broadcast, and that is that they'll have five rounds less a season. Whatever, how many games is that? 35 games less a season to have all these ads and stuff. So that'll be the only issue. But yeah, I think it's quite fair if you do that.
Something
to think about.
Yeah.
We'll move on now from AFL to some cricket. And Australia, if you didn't hear about it, we played in the ICC Champions Trophy over there in the so-called summer of England. We got knocked out, unfortunately, by England overnight. And another rain effect the match. We got smashed pretty much. Was there too much in the background for us Aussies to do well in this tournament? This is in terms of the pay dispute, the ongoing pay dispute with the players and Cricket Australia.
I honestly think that it would have played on their minds a bit, just because I think there was so much noise about it in the lead up to this competition, tournament, whatever you want to call it, and throughout, in that there was just new developments being made every single, like, at least every day with it. So you have a team who's trying to prepare for a tournament so they can be the best that they can, and the whole time you have Cricket Australia and you have the Australian Cricketers Association in your ear about what's going on off the field, that I think it would be so hard to concentrate on what you're meant to be doing on the field, that it would have distracted you. And especially when you do have, like, the weather that they had over there and they didn't play any full games until that one last night, I think it was just, like, just a storm of just a lot of bad things that stopped them from being successful. And it's going to hurt Australia's rankings now.
Yeah, like, no doubt.
We're not going to be, like, the number one ranked side in one days. Or we will be very close to losing that ranking. So I think it did play its part. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as much as cricket players want to say that, oh, okay, we don't listen to the media this much, this goes for any sport. As much as they want to say, we don't pay attention to the media, you do.
Yeah.
You read the paper, you go on your phone, you look at social media, it's in there. You're reading about it, and it's pretty much taking over your mindset, taking over your mind, your thoughts, and as something as big as this, as large as this, a pay dispute, and it's been going on for, almost a year now, and players have been, it's been, the question has been poised that would players potentially boycott this year's Ashes?
Ashes, yeah.
So the mindset's probably been on the Ashes more so than this tournament, the Champions Trophy. So I think it definitely did play in the mind, but as you can say, the rain delays didn't help too much to our cause at all.
Yeah, at all.
One full game and that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
And because it's like, when it's a pay dispute, it's like your livelihood on the line. You know what I mean? It's like, it's whether or not you're going to get paid for the next, after June 30, like, am I going to have a job? Like, that's essentially what these cricketers have to deal with.
Exactly.
And that's not, it's not a small thing to think about, you know what I mean? And within the, like, the context of this pay deal, it's also, will my mates who play state cricket, like, are they going to be getting a good deal out of this as well? And so, it's a whole sort of conundrum of just things going on. So, I think it did play its part. And arguably, the pay deal was the biggest story than the Champions Trophy anyway.
I reckon it was as well, yeah, because I didn't know that we were playing in a tournament until we actually started playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you can. It's definitely fair to say that it did play a part in the Aussies' unfortunate going out of the tournament.
And with the Ashes coming up as well, arguably, it just like they've got
that on their mind.
Yeah, more important games to play later in the year anyway. So
is there a point of this tournament?
It's just like, it's kind of like a World Cup,
but it's like it's not.
But it's not. I think it's just like one of those like ICC ranking, like ranking type things where they just sort of put all the teams together to see who's the best type thing.
Yeah, because I can't like
random.
Does it detract a little bit from the World Cups? Do you think?
I think so. Because you want to, because like the World Cup.
You know what I mean? Like
obviously
the World Cup's the World Cup. World Cup and then having this thing every 2 years or whatever,
like,
it is.
Yeah, you would kind of think that this is like, you have the World Cup and then this comes around every 2 years. This is like the Commonwealth Games of one day cricket.
Yeah, I guess you could say like
that. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's important, but it's like everyone's like, oh, you won the Champions Trophy.
Good on you.
Like, cool, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see with years to come. And sticking with cricket, the Southern Stars have officially changed their name to the Australian Cricket Women's Team. Lucy, is this a promotion of gender equality in cricket?
I think it is. Like, I do genuinely think that it is a promotion of gender equality in cricket, in that both teams now have the same name and everything like that. And
was it necessary, though?
Well, they're still going to colloquially call the women's team the Southern Stars. So maybe it was time. Maybe it was necessary. And I think a big step towards this was like such a minor detail in this whole thing that happened a few months ago, was that I received an email, because I think I must be signed up to like the cricket, like Cricket Australia stuff. But I received an email that said the tickets for the men's Ashes have gone on sale. So it didn't say tickets for the Ashes have gone on sale. It said tickets for the men's Ashes have gone on sale. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, that's kind of cool that they did that, that they were differentiating thing, which is because the women play their Ashes series at the same time as the men.
Yeah.
So the women are going to play their Ashes series in Australia as well this year. So I think it is a promotion of gender equality. But I think now that Cricket Australia has to walk the talk, talk the walk, however that saying goes. Walk the talk with the pay deal for the women as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've put up a pretty good deal for the women. So I hope that sticks in these conversations that they're having. Because then Australian women's cricketers will become Australia's best paid women's athletes if it all goes to plan. So promotion of gender equality in the name, but now actually promote gender equality with what you're putting out. You know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a promotion of gender equality initially, but in terms of the necessity of it, I think you've got the more pressing issue, which, like you said, is the pay dispute. So I don't really find that it was necessary. I like the change. I think it was going to happen eventually, but like the necessity of it, there was no real like, oh, look at all this difference. They call the Australian men's team and they call these girls the Southern Stars. Like, there was no like huge thing, you know what I mean? Mm. I think maybe in a couple of years there might have been that. Mm. So I'm all for the change, but you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think it was, like, that necessary. So hopefully, like you say...
the timing's a bit weird.
Yeah, like, it's kind of before the media storm, I guess, which is kind of smart.
Yeah.
Avoiding it, so...
Oh, well, they do have the Women's World Cup coming up, so maybe they were doing it now so that going into that World Cup, they are the Australian women's team. Cricket team.
Yeah. No, that's good. I like the change. Yeah. Okay, we'll move now from cricket to tennis, and... Nick Kyrgios, unfortunately, he got knocked out in the second round of the Roland Garros, the French Open. How far do we think he'll go in Wimbledon, which you could say is his most preferred, most liked tournament?
Yeah, he definitely has done well in Wimbledon the last few years. And, you know, he blamed his results in... Not blamed, but, you know, sort of...
He blamed.
But he cited...
It's Nick.
He cited the death of his grandfather...
Which is totally fair.
Which is totally fair, because that wasn't that long ago. It would have been less, probably a month, 3 weeks before Roland Garros. And he only played the Madrid Open beforehand.
He had, like, no energy in the lead-up to the French Open at all. He was just, like, that loss of his grandfather just killed him. Mm. Emotionally, mentally, physically as well.
You get taken out of the sport as well, things like that. So I think his run into the French Open wasn't that good, but... In signs that, you know, are not suggestive of the usual Nick Kyrgios, he sort of said, I have my new coach now. Now's the time for me to sort of bunker down, get myself ready, put in the hard yards so I can be successful. So I think he's ready to sort of not, you know, you would never say I'm going to put the death of my grandfather behind me or anything like that, but sort of ready to use it as motivation to be a better tennis player. So I reckon we could see him... get into, what, the quarterfinals again or something like that? Like, and I hope he's successful. That's what I hope.
If any year is the year for Nick to go up in the rankings, to really announce himself, this is the year. I mean, Novak Djokovic, his reign at the top's practically ended. I mean, he lost to Dominic Thiem in the quarterfinals of the French Open, who obviously Dominic Thiem went on to lose to Nadal. And who's the final? It's Nadal and Wawrinka. In the French Open final, just to mention that. But, yeah, with the fall of Djokovic now as number one, Murray not really playing the best tennis of his life. Nadal, Federer sort of back into it. Mm. Wawrinka still up there. It's sort of open now. And this is probably the best chance Kyrgios is going to get to really boost himself up in the rankings and show how good of a talent he is and how good he can be in future years. So I think... this is his best tournament. I remember him making the quarterfinals after he beat, like, Nadal in round four. Can't quite remember who he lost to in the quarterfinals, but I think he definitely makes the quarterfinals at Wimbledon, albeit he gets a friendly draw, because with tennis, Grand Slams, it's all about the draw. And Kyrgios, in the lead-up to the French Open, he lost a protected top 16 pick, top ranking. So that means is that you...
have to play a highly seeded
Yeah, you have to play a seed.
Rounds, yeah.
Yeah, whereas if you were in the top 16, you'd play him in like the third or fourth round, a seeded player. So that could play an effect in his draw, so let's hope it doesn't. But I just got a feeling he can make a quarters, potentially even semis, if he can get onto a run. Because he loves Wimbledon, he loves the grass, he's had a very good record there. So, yeah, it could be exciting come it a month's
be,
time.
Yeah, it could be very exciting. And as we said, he's got the new coach, so if he bunkers down, it's the first time which is ridiculous that it's the first time he's had a coach, like a professional, like proper backing sort of thing like this. So maybe this will do him some good. He'll get out there, be backed by the coach, and bring in a performance that'll make Australia proud.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, because I think people are kind of they still write him off a little bit. But
yeah.
I hope he's successful. I want to see him prove people wrong. That's what
Me
I want.
Me too. Yeah. I love Nick. I just reckon he's going to be a superstar. And we'll go to his more preferred sport, basketball. He's publicly stated that he loves the NBA. He'd prefer to be a basketball than a tennis player.
I can't believe that he comes out and says that he's just like, I would definitely be in the NBA if I played basketball.
But that's him.
Like, yeah, like, that's just true. It's him. But you're like, really?
Don't you love that about him, though? Because do you reckon other tennis players may want to play another sport?
I don't think so.
But do you think, say, other sports stars, like, you ask every footy player what they would rather be, I guarantee you the majority of them would say rock star.
A rock, like, as in, like, a musician.
Yeah.
True.
So, I love it how Nick's just like so open about this.
He's just like, yeah, I do it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we'll go with basketball. The NBA finals are happening right now. Game five. Game five is on Tuesday morning, Australia's time. Can the Cavs win that and potentially take it to seven games? Because Golden State are up 3-1 at the moment.
It's a big call, and we were speaking about this before we started recording. Mm-hmm. Cavs came back from 3-1 last year.
Can they come back from
3-0? So can they come back again? I think this just pumps LeBron James up. Like, I think this just makes him just go, we've got this. And, you know, the sort of, like, I know everyone knows that he's a very good player, but Kyrie Irving, like, the last few games has sometimes outplayed LeBron James. So I think if they both turn it on and Kevin Love is...
Well, the key to the Cavs' accurate performances is if those two are helping James, because more often not, James is just going to post up triple-doubles, because this final series, he's averaging a triple-double.
Which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So if those...
It's been a season of triple-doubles, hasn't it? Oh, Russell Westbrook breaking the record for Bill Russell.
Everyone's just breaking records. And as we said, that's the thing for this final series, is that it's been quite tremendous in that a record falls every single game, it seems. That what's stopping the Cavs from doing what someone's never done? That's what I think. I think it's like just so extraordinary, these series, that what is stopping the Cavs from doing something that's never been done before? Like, usually you'd say, oh no, they can't do it. But because of just these series and what's been happening, you would go, it's possible, you know?
Siri wanting to ask a question there.
Siri wants some answers.
Well, with, what was I going to say? What were you talking about first? Sorry.
Just like the records and stuff. And
okay, yeah, we'll start with the records. With this season, I mean, no one's ever won from 3-0. Last season, no one had ever, prior to last season, the last series, final series, no one had won from 3-1 down. The Cavs did that. So there's no doubt the Cavs can certainly do this. So I think the key to the Cavs winning this match is if they can get off to a really good start, similar to what they did in Game 4, where they posted 49 points in a first quarter.
That was... when I
49.
Started, I think I started watching halfway through and they were on, like, like 30-something. I was like, is this... this is the first... what is going on? And they just kept scoring and scoring and scoring. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
They've come just to play.
It's so ridiculous. So 49 points in a first quarter... if they can do, I don't know, if they outscore the Warriors, say, by 5-10 points early, even if they get out to, like, say, a 15-point lead and the Warriors can sort of pick it back, I think that will play on the minds of the Warriors massively, because in the back of their minds, they're going to be thinking, oh, crap, the Cavs last year came back from 3-1.
Yeah.
Are they going to do it again? Yeah. What if they do it again? So if the Cavs get off to a huge start...
if they get off to a huge start and they guard Stephen Curry the way that they did...
yeah.
They did, then they'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because he was not effective at all yesterday, Steph Curry, in that game.
Same with Durant. They sort of shut them out. But I think the key to one of the major reasons why the Cavs actually won that was Kyrie Irving. He finally showed his own in this game. He scored 40-odd points or whatever it was. And prior to this game, he was just nothing. Like, he didn't really contribute at all. I mean, obviously LeBron was having the triple doubles, but you can't rely on one player when you're playing against this side, the Warriors, who are potentially one of the greatest sides ever in history, with the addition of Kevin Durant now. So, and that reminds me of a point that I was going to bring on earlier. This series, if that game really helps LeBron's legacy in terms of comparing him to Jordan, in my opinion, I think LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan. As crazy as that sounds.
Be cool.
Yeah, for me, and I think this is maybe the case for a lot of kids my age, we didn't really get to see Jordan in his prime and, like, really appreciate him. And James has been the best player that we've really seen. So that's, from my point of view, I think James is the best player and just the best all-round player in terms of against Jordan, who's probably predominantly just a scorer. So if LeBron had a loss that, the Cavs had a loss game 4 and got swept in the finals, allowing the Warriors to go through a final series 16-0, which has never been done before, I think you just quash all the talks about LeBron being better than MJ. But
this sort of
brings it back to normal again, and just that even if LeBron does go on to lose this series, it won't hurt his legacy as much, because as good as the Warriors have been, they're one of the greatest teams. Like Jordan never played against a team this good. as the Warriors. I mean, I remember reading a stat, Jordan played only 9 Hall of Famers in his finals opponents. LeBron's faced 26 Hall of Famers.
That's, yeah.
That's obviously that's, potential Hall of Famers as well, but that's ridiculous. Call, yeah. So I think if LeBron wins from here, if they win in 7 games, which I think they can if they get off to a good start in game 5, LeBron's better than MJ. That's it. Full stop. I think it already, but I think that just quashes
big,
the argument.
Yeah, it'll be a big talk that if everyone... Yeah.
But that's if.
He's got every single record now in terms of playoffs and finals and stuff, I'm
exactly.
pretty sure. So
he does.
This is
he beats
last...
MJ in basically everything but championships.
But championships. So this is his last thing that he needs to do.
Because all MJ fans just go to you and say six rings. But you're forgetting...
How many does James have now?
James has only got 3, and he's lost 4 times. That's why they're saying if he loses 5, it's basically the end of the argument. Mm. But MJ didn't make the finals as many times as LeBron. He got knocked out in the first round, second round. LeBron's never been knocked out in the first round. MJ has.
Ooh.
So, yeah,
there's so many intricacies to these arguments.
Yeah,
we can
talk about this all day. I love it. So, yeah, back to this series, it's all down to game 5. I think game 5 will be like a game 7 for the Warriors. They will treat it like a game 7 because they're going to just be thinking of last year, 3-1, crap. We don't want to do it again. So, yeah, this is huge. If the Cavs get off to a huge start, it's going to play on the Warriors mentally, and I think they'll lose that game. They'll then lose game 6, and it'll go down to game 7. Who knows what could happen. But if the Warriors beat them out early, they'll win it. They'll win the championship, and quite deservedly so. They have been the best season this regular...
team
this regular season, so...
And playoff.
And playoffs, So, and one of the best all-time, potentially. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see come Tuesday.
We'll see.
Who knows? All right, we'll move on from basketball now to some soccer. And this has been an argument that was raised by Kane Corns, a former Port Adelaide footballer in the week. There was just under 30,000 who attended the Socceroos match against Saudi Arabia at the Adelaide Oval. Was it Wednesday?
Thursday night.
Whatever it was. And yet there were 50,000 that rocked up for the Friday night match between Adelaide and St Kilda.
Mm.
96,000 rocked up to the G on Friday night to watch Brazil and Argentina.
Mm.
So can we say, in terms of the 96,000, can we say that soccer's on the same level as the AFL? But in terms of the Socceroos, what can they do to attract more of a following? Because the following's there. 96,000 rock up to the G. What can they do?
Well, you and me discussed this in, I think we both read the same article on this. And I think it raised a few very good points in that the Socceroos are so accessible now. They play in the A-League and things like that. So you see you see crowds rock up to Brazil and Argentina the way they did on Friday because they haven't seen these players play properly.
Yeah, like when are you going to see Lionel Messi play? I wish I was there.
I know.
I wish I could have seen that.
It was like...
I'm sure you do too. You didn't go, did you?
I didn't go, no. Yeah. I'm an MCC member and I was like, surely I can like get in. And then Dad was like, no, the tickets are still like $150, $180 if you want to go. I was like, oh, I don't have that much money.
I still would have paid it.
Yeah. If I had a proper job and like was earning fine money, like I would have gone, but I
would have given up junk food for a week. Or something, a $4 coffee.
I couldn't have parted with it. But
Lionel Messi, that would have been
great. But seeing Lionel Messi and there were so many, like a few of them had flown into Melbourne from like Madrid from the UEFA Champions final
and stuff.
Because they just won that. So, you know, we're talking top tier players that you never get to see play. And I think that's a good point with the Socceroos is that now you see...
Everyone in the A-League.
In the A-League and
Premier
stuff.
Premier League, you can watch that now on TV more.
And also with the qualifiers, I think Australians now are very apathetic towards Australia and the World Cup.
Mm.
In that... Australia making the World Cup has lost its shine.
Yeah, because now it's more expected.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess. Yeah, because 2006 when the crowds were like at their prime, because you'd see like Viduka, Cahill, all that Akil playing overseas, and we hadn't made a World Cup in
since 1945 or something like that.
I think it was a bit early, 1980s or something. So it was
it was like ridiculously like we hadn't made one since like the 40s or something. It was like.
I'll check that now.
That's why it was so. That's why it was so big.
I swear it was
big,
the 80s. I swear it was
because
the 80s.
We hadn't made it for so
74.
Many. 74. Yeah. Okay. 74.
So there was the four. So there's the four. It was around 1980. So we'll give that 50-50 to both of us. Yep. We're both right there. We're 1974 was the last time we'd made it prior to 2006.
So, so that's still like 30 years of us not being in a World Cup, you know?
That's ridiculous.
And that's not with us having bad sides. Like, we still like Musket playing for us, and there was, what's his name? The annoying commentator with the grey hair,
Craig Foster.
Craig Foster. He was playing. Archie Thompson was playing in there. Yeah. Like, all of them. Like, so we still had good sides, but it was that we had to play, always had to play a South American team to get in. And I just don't think we ever jumped that hurdle until 2006.
Uruguay.
So, which was, I know, every single time you're just like, that's one of Australia's great sporting
Even though I didn't watch it live, I've just watched so many replays and I just remember that. It's just, that's etched in my mind, just the history of it.
Oh, I remember, like, running around the house with my mum, like, watching it live. Like, it was phenomenal.
I remember watching the World Cup, though. I remember watching the World Cup.
Yeah, that was, and that was big, too. So,
I think now it's expected. So, we just expect making it.
So,
it?
We don't go 06, to the qualifiers because we're like, what's the use in going to the qualifiers when they're going to make it into the World Cup? Like, when they get into the World Cup, it'll be fine. But like,
this was a huge match in terms of the qualifying, but I feel there hasn't been...
I think Australians go the other way, where they're like, oh, they're not going to make it now. Whatever.
Yeah, but, like, there hasn't been much build-up, if you think about it.
True, yeah.
Like, I only really started looking into it maybe the Monday prior to the match, just saying, oh, crap, we actually really need to win this match. So, like, there wasn't really that much media coverage in terms of, oh, this is a do-or-die match for the Socceroos. They need to win this to stay against the World Cup. So I think maybe until it comes the year that we miss the World Cup, maybe the crowds will come up. Who knows? But it's a bit weird considering
It's a timing thing as well. So it's the accessibility, it's the apathy towards it, and probably...
During the week as well.
During the week, and also it is AFL season. You know what I mean? And I think if it was like... build as a match where it was like, if we don't win this, if we win this game, we're straight through.
Yeah.
If we don't win it, we're out. Whereas this was kind of like, we have to win this game, but it wasn't like, if we lose, we're completely out.
Yeah.
So I think it didn't have that excitement. And also, I think also questions on the venue. Like, they should have had it at, like, Hindmarsh Arena in Adelaide.
Yeah,
which does hold a smaller number of people, but at least you would have had that atmosphere.
Yeah. And also, you guys taking the fact of that, the A-League season finished, what was it, a month ago?
Yeah.
2 months ago, whenever it was. So soccer kind of like died down. Yeah, there wasn't that much of interest of it. But then again, the counter argument you can just say to that is that 96,000 rocked up to the G. So that's just...
There's still a love for the game in Australia. Yeah. It's just a different love.
I think,
you know,
Melbourneians in particular, we know which sporting events to go to.
Yeah.
And that just tells you there the Friday night.
That tells you exactly.
Match. We'll finish off on netball, and the final of the netball competition is taking place this weekend.
This weekend.
Yep. So, GWS take on Sunshine Lightning. So, just a prediction before we end the show.
I think GWS will win. I think we're both on this one.
Yeah.
Mainly because they've had the harder run, GWS. They've had to beat Magpies, who were fired up, and they had to beat...
the
Vixens last night. And not only did they beat the Vixens last night, they beat them pretty comfortably. It was like 8 or 9 goals in the end. So, go with all of that winning momentum into the grand final and Sunshine Coast coming off a week off, I think I'd go GWS.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm going GWS. I mean, they beat Collingwood, was it, by 1 point in the semis. And they beat the top of the table Vixens, who were the number one place team, by 8 points here in Melbourne last night. So I just think they could do a doggies. They could just have all the momentum and just go through. And you've just seen time and time again in any final series, teams with momentum, they're hard to stop.
Oh yeah.
And the week off, I don't know how much of an effect it has in netball, but the week off may potentially be a negative factor for the Sunshine Lightning. And I just think the Giants will just go in with the momentum and they'll get the chocolates. I think they'll win.
Yeah. It's like when you have the winning feeling and you feel like you've got that formula going through a final series, I feel like you always just get to the grand final and you have that belief. You're just like, we may be the underdogs, we may be the outsiders, but we know what we're doing, and if we play well, we can get the win.
Yep. All right, I think that ends this week's podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. We've gone a little bit over time, but there's just been so much to talk about.
In
the
world
sport. Only like a couple of topics, but there's just so much you can talk about, especially because we've missed a little bit. But yeah, it's been good. So do keep an eye on the NBA finals. The AFL season is just so tight. So look into that. And also next week, Lucy won't be in here, but I'll have an interview with my good old mate, Matty Signorello, who got drafted by the Adelaide Crows in last year's draft. He's currently playing in the Sandful, so do listen to that. I'll chuck up a post on Facebook where you can, where I'll allow you to comment some questions that you'd like to put Siggers' way, and not only the appropriate ones and the good ones I'll put his way, so please be nice in terms of that. So, yeah, we'll be interviewing him next week, so do tune into that, and the following week we'll be back, as always, for the podcast. So, hope you've enjoyed listening to us this week. Sorry for being away for so long, but yes, we hope you've enjoyed listening to our songs, our dulcet tones, and, yeah, it's been a huge week in sport, and just watch the MF Finals. So do you think Warriors take game five?
I think Cavs take it. I'm with you. I think it's going to go to seven games.
I've just got a feeling that the Cavs will take it. So let's hope so. Let's hope the Cavs take it to seven, make it a really good final series. And yeah, this AFL season is just going to get tighter and tighter. And that's been another edition of the Sports Desk podcast, where we talk nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world.